is Joan Michelson of Green Connections Radio, where we help you live green, work green, and earn green. You can visit us on the web at greenconnectionsradio.com, like us on Facebook, and find me on Twitter at Joan Michelson. Speaking of Facebook, I have Bill Weil here, the sustainability guru at Facebook. Welcome.
Thanks, Joan. Glad to be here.
Thank you so much. I love your titles, by the way. The green guru at Google and the sustainability guru. I love the unconventional titles. It's very refreshing.
Oh, thank you. It's one of the ways we like to have fun.
Yeah, well, I can tell that. So, first of all, computers are, one of the biggest energy consumers on the planet. And obviously, you guys have a lot of servers. So, how do you manage that without risking the service going down at any time?
We do have a lot of servers. We have them in a number of data centers around the world. We work really hard to build those facilities. Some of them we own, we built and we own them. Some of them are ones where we rent space in facilities owned by others. We work really hard to make sure those facilities are reliable and build our systems overall so that even if one of our data centers were to go down, we can continue to provide service to our users.
Do you do that with backup generators, or do you do that, what's your backup system?
It really depends on the site. Most data centers, ours and others, do have backup generators on site in case the utility power goes out. We also have short-term backup power in the form of batteries. But it really depends on the site. I'll give you a simple example. We have a data center in northern Sweden. It's powered by 100% by hydropower. The grid there is very reliable, and the structure of the grid is such that even if part of the grid goes out, the odds are very high that another part will still be up, and we're connected to both parts. That meant we were able to eliminate most of the backup generators in our Luleå, Sweden data center. So it really depends on the site and the structure of the grid and how reliable the grid is, but we can tolerate a data center going out, but we really don't want that to happen, so we work pretty hard to make sure it doesn't happen.
Is that 100% hydropower?
Yes.
Wow. Well, Sweden's a small country, so, how do you obviously that system gets isolated, I presume.
The grid in Sweden is connected to the grid in some of the other Nordic countries up there. If you look at the whole region, it's a mix of hydro and nuclear and some other sources. We've contracted specifically with hydropower.
Hmm. Why?
Because it was a way to get clean and reasonably cheap electricity.
It was the best option, I presume.
Right. I mean, they're exactly.
Okay. I also noticed that you're using solar in some facilities. Are you guys? Well, I want to hear some about that, but I also want to hear about what you're doing in the U.S. because computers are, they're so ubiquitous, and I'd love to see, the statistics on exactly what percentage of our energy consumption they take up, because I know that buildings and transportation are the top two, but it seems to me that we run our lives on computers.
So we do, or many of us do. There are probably still a few holdouts, but certainly in this country, in the developed world, they are ubiquitous. And they do consume energy. They consume a surprisingly small amount of energy, and in fact, computers have been getting more efficient year over year at an exponential rate, just as they've been getting more powerful. And that's been happening for decades. The best estimates, you're not going to find an exact number for the energy consumed by computers, but there certainly are estimates out there. The best estimates are that all of information and communications technology consumes somewhere around 2, maybe 2.5% of the electrical power, not all of the energy, but electrical power in the U.S., and a similar number worldwide. And that number is certainly growing as the penetration of computers and the sort of these devices become more and more ubiquitous throughout our lives, but growing pretty slowly, much more slowly than people predicted a few years ago because the efficiency gains have been more than predicted. Computers are also displacing many activities that people traditionally did using, what people would say, using atoms instead of bits, sending a letter through the post office instead of sending an email, or taking a picture on film and printing it out instead of taking it with a digital camera or your phone and sharing it with people online. And the energy cost and the carbon emissions associated with an email instead of versus what would be required, say, to send a letter, an email is orders of magnitude lower. Same is true for a digital picture versus a picture on film and paper. There's no question that computers are doing more and more for us. I think on the whole, they are making those things much more energy efficient and much more environmentally sustainable in the process.
Well, that's very interesting. That's an excellent point that, you know, obviously email replacing the Postal Service despite their economic problems at the moment. What about the, does that include more energy efficient computer chips? I recall in speaking with the IEEE that they're working on some computer chips that use half as much energy as computer chips have in the past.
So if you look at the energy consumption by CPUs over time, by memory, by network chips and so on, the energy by consumed by an individual chip, and in some years it goes up, in some years it goes down, but the energy per useful computation has gone down a lot. So the energy efficiency has gone down a lot. And there are a number of things that have happened over the years to do that, or to make that happen. The IEEE is an organization. Certainly there are many things that they work on, and that their members work on, including energy efficiency. So I'm not familiar with the specific thing you're talking about, but certainly there are many advances in chip technology that are driving efficiency. At a higher level, looking at the data centers and the servers themselves, we and others in the internet industry have been very focused on improving the designs of the data centers and of the servers and of the other equipment in the data centers, the storage systems, the network systems, to improve efficiency. And over the last few years, we've achieved major efficiency gains. We've designed our own servers and our own data centers, and in the process, reduced our costs by about a quarter and reduced the energy consumption by almost 40%.
Wow.
And we've done that in collaboration with others in the industry, and this is a really key point, is that it's not something that we've done just ourselves and that we're keeping private to ourselves, but we've open sourced our designs and set up a foundation, the Open Compute Project, to serve as a venue for us and others in the industry to collaborate on improving those designs and on developing new designs, and energy efficiency is one of the key goals there.
Well, I was going to ask you about the Open Compute Project, so thank you for bringing that up. Is that how is that the primary mechanism through which you are coordinating with others in the computer industry to increase the energy efficiency of data centers?
Yes, I mean, I think that is, we've, as I said, open sourced our designs through the Open Compute Project, and I think there are several dozen, maybe even a couple hundred companies and organizations at this point who have joined and are taking part. A number of them have submitted their own designs. A number are collaborating on the designs that we and others have submitted. So that really is the primary venue, if you will. We also obviously work directly with some of our suppliers and partners. So there are, you know, one-on-one relationships as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think another conversation we could have sometime is how you decide what to share in that Open Computer Project and what not to, because obviously you still have some IP issues that you probably want to keep to yourself. I noticed in some of the research you talked about the vanity-free servers. What is the vanity-free servers? What's different about them?
If you buy a server from one of the major manufacturers, it will come with a lot of standard equipment on it, standard components and features that for many people who buy it, particularly those who are installing large quantities of servers, those features are really not useful. So we have stripped out a lot of those components and a lot of the software features to give us more of a bare-bones server that is cheaper, that's more energy efficient. There are also some things that you get on a commodity server that really are pure vanity. They're only there to make it look good. So a typical server you buy from a major manufacturer has a really nice faceplate on the front that's probably got some nice curvature to it. It might be made out of plastic. It's got the manufacturer's logo on it. It's great for advertising the server. The only problem with that is it gets installed in a place where not many people go, and the people who do go there know exactly who made the servers anyway. So having that logo in front of them all the time doesn't really add much value. And the only real physical impact it has is that it sits on the front of the server and it impedes airflow, which means the fans have to work harder to cool the server.
Well, so that's silly design. Why would they put that? Why would they put the logo on a place that impedes the airflow? That doesn't seem to make any sense.
Well, you stick a big plastic thing on the front, even with some you know slits cut in it for the air to go through. It will restrict the airflow, and that's what happens. Mm-hmm. And that means the fans work harder, and that wastes energy. And you have to produce this plastic thing, and when you're done with the server, you have to get rid of it. So we've stripped out all of that kind of stuff as well. And in the process, you know, that's what we mean when we say vanity free. We get rid of all of the unnecessary stuff. We've also focused on the maintainability of the servers. So we've eliminated some of the parts of the case of the server and some of the fasteners that actually make it harder and slower for a data center technician to go in and fix a problem in a server. So we've designed the server to be very easy for a technician to go in there, pull the server out of the rack, fix something, and put it back. We put all of the connections on the front, whereas a typical server actually would have some of the connections, like for the power, on the back of the server, which means that the technician has to run around to the other side of the rack to do that, and that slows things down. So all of these things together really optimize the amount of materials in the server, the energy consumed by the server, the time and effort involved in maintaining it when there's a problem. And all of that contributes to reduced cost and reduced environmental impact.
Hmm. Where did these ideas come from? Did they come from the people who were doing the maintaining of the servers themselves, or did they come from you, or where did these ideas come from?
It's a mix of the people doing the data center technicians who are on the data center floor managing, maintaining the servers, and the people who design the servers. They talk to each other and look at, you know, if we did it this way, what impact might that have on the maintainability? If we do it this other way, what might that have? What problems, you know, the designers ask the data center techs, what problems do you run into? What ideas do you have that would allow us to make this better for you? So it's a mix.
How will these servers respond to, and how are they being designed to adapt to the smart grid? And frankly, we don't know what the smart grid is really going to look like when all is said and done, so it's a movable target. What kind of systems are in place for you, and I use the word systems in the multiple contexts, really, to plan ahead for and be part of the development of even maybe the smart grid, especially because my understanding is it's really regional. So there is like Sweden, where there's one smart grid, there's going to be multiple pieces around the country that's what makes it smart.
Yeah, the smart grid, I mean, it means a lot of things. What it means to some people is having a smart meter in houses and the ability maybe to turn off air conditioners during peak summer days. For utilities, it means the ability to collect meter data without having to roll trucks. So they've got meters that communicate back to them wirelessly. In addition, for utilities, it can mean having sensors and other mechanisms that allow them to understand what's happening on their distribution grid without having to send people out there. So it means a lot of different things. I think for a data center, actually, it doesn't. There isn't a strong connection today with what people are doing around the smart grid with utilities and what's going on in data centers. The load, electrical load in a data center is relatively flat. Our ability to shift load or shed load is not that great unless we want to disrupt service to our users. So that's not something that's easy for us to do. So the thing we need to do is work with our utility to make sure they understand what our load is, and if they're unable to meet that, then we need to have backup systems in place to ensure that we can continue to provide service.
Oh, that's interesting. That's very interesting. I mentioned solar before a little bit, and I know that you're doing some wind out in Iowa. What other kinds of renewable energy sources is Facebook using besides the hydropower in Sweden? I understand you have some solar panels at your headquarters too. Talk a little bit about the other ways that you're using renewable energy sources.
At our headquarters here in Menlo Park, we've installed two solar systems. These are actually what are called hybrid or cogeneration systems that provide both electricity through standard photovoltaic cells, as well as heat in the form of hot water. So these are installed on our fitness center, as well as on one of the buildings that has one of our cafeterias. And they offset a significant amount of both the fuel that we would otherwise have to burn to make hot water, as well as the electricity in those buildings. We have done a very small solar photovoltaic installation in our Oregon data center. Really is an experiment to understand what would be involved in installing that kind of system next to a data center and integrating it into the electrical system there, and understanding what all the regulations and so on would be around doing a solar system at a place like that. We've done hydro in northern Sweden. We are looking very hard at wind in our new Iowa site that we just announced a few weeks ago. That, I think, will be breaking ground, actually starting construction later this year. So we're looking at a range of options. I'd say our major focus is on finding ways to improve our energy mix, to get more clean energy into our energy mix in a way that actually improves the grid that we are connected to. So we're not just looking for ways to do that will clean up our mix so we can say, you know, we're clean and we're done, but rather what we want to do is clean up the grid around us and collaborate with both other companies but also the utilities that serve us to make that happen.
Do you regenerate back to the grid?
Not today. I mean, the solar that we have in Prineville is very small. It covers the energy essentially consumed by the office space attached to the data center, which is a very small percentage of the overall consumption. The solar we have here in Menlo Park covers a significant chunk of the energy consumed by the two buildings that it's on, but not enough to actually push energy back into the grid.
Okay. I know that a couple years ago, Greenpeace kind of gave you a hard time, let's put it gently. And you've taken, Facebook has taken big strides in the last couple of years. Do you think that the strategies that Greenpeace has employed, which are, you know, fairly aggressive, have kind of forced the company, I mean, maybe they're working?
Well, I would say that if I think about the things that Facebook has done, you have to remember, first of all, that we are actually still a very young company. The company's been in existence for just over 9 years. So several years ago when Greenpeace started targeting Facebook to try to push Facebook to do more of this stuff, some of it, certainly the energy efficiency work was something that Facebook had been very heavily involved in at that point for at least a couple of years. And around the time that Greenpeace started the campaign against Facebook, I think that around that time was when we announced Open Compute, but that had been in the works for quite some time. So I think that much of what has happened is stuff that was going to happen anyway. Greenpeace certainly has heightened the discussion around it, And it's possible that some things have happened a little sooner as a result, but I think that it's certainly stuff that we want to do and we've intended to do, and we're delighted to be working with Greenpeace and talking with them to try as I said, not just improve our own environmental footprint, but really do things that will help improve the footprint of the grid and others attached to the grid.
For the whole computer industry, really.
Well, the computer industry, and honestly, I mean, we're attached to an electrical grid and served by utilities in the places where we have data centers or our offices here. So are other data centers, but so are other businesses, so are homes. So as those utilities get more clean energy into their mix, that will affect everybody who's served by those utilities.
So I have one other quick business question and then one other more consumer-driven question. And one is there are a lot of indexes out now, the Dow Jones Sustainability Index, and Walmart has a consumer-oriented one, and there's one focused on electronics. And how do we make sense of them? Do they work? Do you think they're useful? What's your take on those?
There are a lot of indexes. I think there's a lot of confusion around them. I really couldn't say how well they work. I think you'd have to ask somebody who's involved in marketing and really studying those indexes. We are not engaged with them, those various indexes, very much. We have started about a year ago to be transparent about and open about our energy consumption and our carbon footprint. We just a few weeks ago released real-time dashboards to the public that basically show how efficient our data centers are and allow people to track in real time how we're doing from an efficiency point of view, and that really helps hold us accountable and also demystifies how the data centers work a bit. So we're trying to put out information that we think will be useful, but we're not certainly driven by the various indexes that are out there.
Hmm. Even as a publicly traded company now?
Right.
Interesting. So my consumer-oriented question, you actually gave me a pretty good segue, is if people have an idea of how you might, I mean, there's a lot of brilliant people out there in this field. If somebody has an idea about how to improve the energy efficiency of Facebook and computer industry, et cetera, and wants to contribute to the dialogue, what can they do? I presume you're going to suggest they go to Open Compute, but tell us about what they do, what a step is that they can take.
I think that's actually the perfect place for them to go. The Open Compute runs, I think, what is now an annual summit. There were something like 1,500 people there in January. There was a lot of activity. There's an enormous amount of material online. I think if someone's interested in that space, they should read everything that's on the Open Compute site and get involved in the one or more of the technical working groups in Open Compute. It's an organization that is set up to move very quickly. Unlike some standards organizations and other trade groups, which are much more bureaucratic and move very slowly. So if people have creative ideas, they can get exposure for them and get other people engaged with them. If they're good ideas, I think that they will go somewhere. So that's absolutely the place to go.
Great. Perfect. Thank you so much. Well, thank you again for your time. This is Joan Michelson with Bill Weil of Facebook, the sustainability guru. You're on Green Connections Radio, where we help you live green, work green, and earn green. You can find us online on greenconnectionsradio.com. Find us on Facebook.